Zoe, welcome to episode 3 of the Systematic Mastery Reboot series. I'm glad you are here today. How are you? And where are you, most important?
Thank you, man. Good to be here. Nice introduction as well. It feels like I'm coming on as a guest for the first time in like this wonderful and epic season 2 of the Systematic Mastery Reboot. I'm really good. I'm in London right now. So that's kind of back to where I think it partially started. It's been nice. I've been working quite a lot lately on a new crypto thing and also some other ideas. It's been nice to see the weather improve. So now that we did that small talk, I would like to know
how
you were doing, and let's dive into it. Yeah.
I can see you're on a tight schedule, like a real tech bro. That's good. Your 100%. Next meeting is probably in an hour or so.
It's already started.
Anyway. Yeah. I always have 3 meetings at the same time. Anyway, I'm doing good as well, man. Was a busy few weeks. A lot of stuff going on. And looking forward to this episode, this podcast. So the last few episodes, the last two, we dived a bit first in the reboot, what we're going to do. That these talks are just going to be more like just us free-flowing and having chats, interesting conversations on topics we find interesting and we would discuss anyway. So last one, we talked a little bit about AI. I have gathered so much new information afterwards, so I want to dive into that in another one as well. But this time, I think it's nice, and I think you agree with that, to discuss a little bit another concept that interested both of us. We talked about this last year in Boom Festival in Portugal. There's a summer festival in quite a psychedelic state, so to speak. We had a nice conversation on something that you called the network state. And for me, this was an entirely new idea, a new concept, and you referred me to a book also with the same title, The Network State, and I did some skimming of that. It's actually perfect for that. It's a very interesting book. Also, the concept of the book itself, it's quite new, so it's not a book that you read in the general sense. It's a book that's constantly updated. It's online. It's for free. We can also link it here. That really has sparked my interest more and more. In the beginning, I didn't really quite get it, and I'm probably still struggling to understand the full implications of it. But I also see it, the term being dropped now and again, more in some crypto communities, more in some Discord channels, also in psychedelic communities. I see like it being dropped. I think that even you went to a network state in Montenegro lastly, one of the first ones. So this idea is entering my life more. So I think it's good to have a chat on it. What is it? How does it work? What does it look like? And what are the implications of this if it is deemed to be a success or something that is going to be manifested in actual reality, of course. So yeah, that's basically what I want to talk about with you. And maybe you can take it off by giving a little bit of context on why you think it's so interesting and basically what it is in your view, a network state.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, I can start with a small definition. I've read most book and a lot of podcasts and spoke to a lot of people about it so far. I was not, unfortunately, at Zuzalu, the Montenegro network state, unfortunately. Mm. I was talking with some people that were there, and there's some Telegram groups that I'm in where people were present, and it was very interesting. I think Vitalik Buterin was there as well, speaking about things along the lines of what is Zuzalu about, network state, and the interest there, and this is actually a really nice bridge to the definition, because what is Zuzalu, what is network state? I think what is probably best is to start with the definition of the book actually gives. They really call it the network state in one sentence. And I think I couldn't do a better job than what's done there. The network state is a highly aligned online community with a capacity for collective action that crowdfunds territory around the world and eventually gains diplomatic recognition from pre-existing states. Now, there's a lot to unpack there. Mm. Obviously, the example of Zuzalu, which is a kind of a pop-up city, as they called it, in Montenegro, is not really the complete definition here of a network state. However, it's very much a collection of people that are part of an online community. That's basically what happened there. They get together for several months in what they called a pop-up city. And then what is kind of central to this is what Balaji in his book calls the one commandment. So there's like a couple of kind of moral themes that he gives as an example in the book as well, and that you can say, hey, we are organizing ourselves as an online community, initially online, around what you can refer to as like a moral innovation. So something that you mm-hmm. as an online community believes, like, this is something we should be doing differently or focusing on purely, or having some kind of systematic aspect focused on whatever we think this moral innovation is. Let's go to an example. I think what he also mentioned in the book is, and what Zuzulu actually was focused on is, for example, longevity. So if you say like, hey, we should have complete freedom to experiment and investigate means to extend our lifespan. And obviously in a lot of places that is not super easy because there's regulation. You can't get access to certain methods or drugs or whatever. And if you do want to learn that, then you can get together, potentially pop-up city in an area where that is allowed, and communicate and work on this experiment potentially with this more freely. And that's kind of like, you know, V0.1, I guess, of the network state is what Zuzulu was about. It's much more a community thing, but eventually you can see that evolve into like an actual V1 of a real network state, more in line with the definition that he gave. And that is that you eventually get diplomatic recognition, and it evolves into this community owning land and kind of mm-hmm. a much more formal establishment. So I think that is kind of like in a slightly more story kind of way, given an example that was already in real life, what the network state more or less is.
Okay. Okay, I think it's of course already a lot to unpack there, but I think that's a very good starting definition. First of all, like, you mentioned Balaji and the author a few times. Who is he, by the way? Is he like maybe it's good for the listeners, the five listeners we have, to highlight who this guy is that wrote this book?
Yeah, it will be nice for us when we re-listen our own episode to get the definition of Balaji. So the guy is from India. He's super smart. I mean, that's what his credentials and his general vibe, in my opinion, give off. Very interesting to listen to. He has a PhD in and around genetics, and he was a CTO of Coinbase, which is a company I think a lot of people know, and we definitely know. And this is also where it was actually interesting when I became CTO of Blockport. I remember thinking to myself, what is a good CTO, and what are some people that I would like to follow, get an understanding of how they operate. And at that time we were called the Coinbase killer by this small and nutcase community, beautiful nutcase community that we had. And I remember looking up a CTO of Coinbase, and it was this guy. So then I kind of started following him already. This was 2017, and since then he started working on network state quite a bit later when he left Coinbase, and now I think the primary thing he does is try and work on this idea, community around it, show up in podcasts, explain it. His full name is Balaji Srinivasan, and we'll make sure to put a link to network state and himself in the show notes.
You practiced that one, I can tell.
Yeah, a couple times.
Okay. Okay, I know that makes sense. Okay, for context. You said like people, or he's explaining it to going on a podcast, explaining the concept. Like I've watched a few, I read the book, like I skimmed it a little bit. What I like about the book, he gives first in one sentence, then in one paragraph, then in one like essay. So he really goes into more depth along the way. I noticed within myself, I am touching like the basic foundations of the idea, but I'm not fully grasping it or grappling with it yet. So I'm just like trying to understand it. So my understanding is that with the advent of, let's say, first you had money, then you had social media, Now you have the capacity to go even one step beyond that. So these are like high level concepts. You can with the internet, you can allow certain communities that align on something, like you said, for example, longevity, you can allow them to form a group that in the end will get some diplomatic rights, and then you can start your own country, basically. That's very simple, the definition, or how I now understand it, right? That's kind of the gist of it. And you with the diplomatic rights, you have your own country, you can then maybe go a step beyond that. But it's more like the technology now allows for decentralization of communities, so that not the classical nation state where everyone is grouped together in one certain geographical location, but you can like decentralize that and people can align on certain views or ideologies or whatever they want to align on. And that's basically the key concept.
Yeah. Correct? I think so. Yeah. I would say though that, like, I mean, it's a manifesto, right? So like it's political, it's economical. There's so many interwoven kind of concepts in there and a basis for his whole argument that I would say this whole idea of like it being a country, full diplomatic recognition, you know, anything that comes with that is like the most visionary, idealistic definition of a network state. And I think, as is with all of these ideas that haven't manifested yet in this way, is that what we'll eventually see might not be exactly that, but he gives a very good outline showing that this is at least in part where we're headed, you know, looking at things that are happening in the world right now. And we can go into that a little bit as well. And I think those are actually based on, that's nice. So he does refer as well to the fact that like, there's a lot of things that are already indicating a migration more or less to what he now coins as the network state, but those things are already happening right now. And a lot of people either see or feel these things happening right now, e.g., you know, things that are now in the media. So I think that makes it quite tangible. It's not just, you know, completely made up, so to say. There's actually some tangible movements already in that direction. So anyways, but I think what you said is exactly right. That would be the end state: country, diplomatic recognition, anything that comes with that.
Oh, okay, and like I have like one key question here. Like I still have to understand, because the cover of the book, like we can also do it again here, like in the image video. I think that's one of the best covers, because it's like very clear for me. It instantly like gives the, you know, I got it when I saw that cover. You know, I think it's a Bitcoin logo and Yin and Yang logo and a Vitruvian man, and you see that, and it's kind of connected to like different dots on the earth, but it symbolizes that there is a central idea or a concept, and that on different locations on the earth you can align with that. Now when I saw that, I was thinking, okay, so is it merely a virtual state? So is it like that we stay on the same location on earth? For example, you're in London right now, I'm in the Netherlands, that we can already form a network state? Or does it get to a point that no, we need to centralize to a physical state? Because I'm also seeing some of that emerging, that once you have enough capital or whatever, or the resource to do that, then it's the goal or the aim to get together in a physical geographical location. How do I have to see that?
Yeah, I think both of them could definitely be part of it. So like, there is this is also a very important part of the whole development towards a network state, is that you initially start with a community. It could be an entrepreneur or like a founder, basically setting up a community or a group of people. And it could be as simple as you just have a Twitter account and you share your thoughts in there, and then people form around that, they start following you. You set up Twitter spaces, then it evolves into a Discord, then a Discord evolves into a meetup, and then the meetup becomes more frequent, and then the meetup grows. And then you can imagine this happens in real life. I don't know how many times, a month or a year. So people collecting around, for example, Bitcoin or some other innovation, maybe longevity is a good example as well. That would already be a network state, in a way, or at least it would be in line with this. So it's a fluid definition in the sense of if you're on the line towards the kind of the potential end state of being, you know, diplomatic recognition and all, then I think you're already on it. The whole point is, and I think it's actually quite good to already kind of go into the backstory. I try to like avoid that a little bit, but I think it really is important to say that we see now in the world in general, like a lot of movements where there's a substantial group of people that has some existential doubt about the current state. And that doesn't mean with state, I mean, by the way, a state. So not the state of the world, but a state, you know, and he obviously gives the example of the US in the number state, like there's a
nation state, right?
A nation state. Yeah, that's better said. Yeah. So the people in the state. Okay. So, but fundamentally the power of the state. So he refers to this as a Leviathan. It's based on a philosophical exploration of the concept of like the most powerful, like say moral, a really huge moral power, like the God, like God was, and now for quite a while has been the state. But at some point, the moral influence and the power of a structure like this starts to crumble. And that is something we've seen in history several times. And I actually believe myself that, and I think Ray Dalio is also someone that shows that in the changing world order, is that there's a cyclical nature to this. Kind of the fourth turning, I don't know if you know that book, we can refer to it in show notes. It's like there's a cyclical nature to the fact that there is a Leviathan-like structure that has a huge amount of influence and power, morally speaking, and also, you know, by virtue of its moral power, physically speaking, because people follow it and build around it and stuff, you know, churches and whatnot. This crumbles at some point. So we're in one of those, as we always are. But now, as part of our general like freedom or optionality seeking habit that we have at the frontier, like the edge of what is currently completely controlled, we have the network, which allows us to venture into a new domain of unexplored territory, right? And who ends up going there? Those are founders, entrepreneurs, they set stuff up. And a lot of the times, we started obviously with completely capitalistic structures there, huge companies like, you know, FANG, Facebook, Apple, etc. But we are also now, especially now that we have Bitcoin as a really central aspect of this, or cryptocurrency, the ability to transact with each other, we can do a lot more. We can set up a moral community, moral innovation on this frontier in the network, the space of the network, where we can easily communicate with each other with people that have the same ideology, but a different physical location. And what he is saying is all of these like huge movements, the fact that there is a establishment that is crumbling, people are doubting that, they collect themselves on the internet, they're able to transact with each other using cryptocurrency. There seems to be a like almost an organic movement to reorganize ourselves in this new kind of dimension of the network, because we're not dependent on physical location anymore. So it's, in a way, it's not a human construct as much. It's more that we have the ability to venture into the network, and people just end up going there because they're seeking discourse. They're seeking a certain sense of optionality to explore, to venture into new domains and create new stuff, because they feel there is need for a moral innovation. So the things that are happening right now, so if you're not religious, if you don't belong in the currently super polarized political spheres, at least, you know, in the mainstream media kind of setting, then it is not unlikely that you find your community with people that have pretty alternative views to how the world should be run, that in a way sometimes even try to exclude themselves from this mainstream media. You know, I don't go on social media, I just want to live in X way, and I don't use my mobile phone as much, etc. Well, you can still communicate with each other and get together on the network, and then the idea is that people form a community around this, And by virtue of having cryptocurrency, we'll eventually be able to, some of them at least, will grow this into something bigger than just a random Discord channel, which eventually could lead into diplomatic recognition. I don't know if that kind of gives a better overview, but this is kind of like where things seem to be leading to. And that's kind of also the point he's trying to make in the book, is like, this seems to be something like a natural next step that we're headed into.
Yes, this makes it a lot more clear. Like, I didn't have this overview before. So basically, what you're saying is that the world is just evolving. And now that the component of the network, a network has been added, that by definition, by default, will lead to a reorganization of consciousness, basically, of cultures, of people. They want to reorganize them around central moral virtues.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's the gist I get. If that makes a lot of sense. So you're expanding what the possibilities. Also, that's you touched on that. And then I think that you're saying this is possible because right now you have technologies like crypto, like Bitcoin, that allow to transact value between those communities or like inside that community. That's an essential component to it, right?
Yes. Yeah, I think what he also mentioned there is like in history you had for a while kind of like a financial innovation that also coincided with power of the state, private banking. There seems to be some interesting, and I haven't looked into this enough yet, but there seems to be some interesting correlation with like a certain, like a group, an increasing group of people resisting, you know, the current Leviathan, e.g. the state or the god or whatever, and then having the ability to organize themselves. And how do they have the ability to organize themselves? It's by getting together, talking, and by transacting with each other, or basically having your basic needs met. I'm assuming you can actually, you can look at, it just escaped me. What is the triangle of needs curve? Who's that by again?
Maslow?
Yeah, Maslow's triangle. Exactly. A hierarchy of needs, sorry. So I'm pretty sure we can take a quick break and like cut this out, but like I'm pretty sure that you can kind of map this to Maslow's hierarchy of needs in a way. It's like if in a situation where this increasing group of people kind of resist themselves, you know, and if they are able to autonomously get themselves to meet at least some of these primary needs in the hierarchy of needs, then from that, you can get something like a network state, or at least an alternative state. Basically, they're just new small colonies, right? But we don't have any physical space left to colonize. And what is the second best option here? Because most of the people, like 8 billion people now, are on the Earth. But the second best option we have is like for what, 5.5 billion people or something is in the network on the internet. That's the best way for now that we have to organize ourselves. Maybe in the future will be space. I mean, we don't have anything better right now. We can't start living under the sea.
Yeah. So I think on top of the Maslow hierarchy, it's self-actualization or individuation, if I believe.
Yeah.
So basically what you're saying is that we are conquering those lower needs in the pyramid, in the hierarchy, and on a collective scale we provide the infrastructure as a species to the other members of the species to allow for that individuation, for that self-actualization. That's kind of it, right? And that is a central part of that is alignment on a moral agreement, like let's say a moral virtue that you feel deeply that you need to connect on. And that's probably why Bitcoin is something like that. It's like Bitcoin maximalist, they kind of like align on that in a way. It's not about Bitcoin, it's about deeper truth beneath that. It's about what they believe in scarcity, in, you know, in reality, in the freedom that lies beyond that, right? That's basically the essence of it. So yeah, that would be such a moral stance, right?
Yeah, I think that's a really good example. Yeah, exactly. Like, I think if you look back at history, like how have people reorganized themselves most massively? It's not simply because of like a purely like, you know, physical, rational technology. It's because of moral ideals that people organize themselves around most. I think what it really comes down to is like the moral ideal or the alternative moral ideal that people come up with is discussed in a community. Back in the day, you would maybe get together, I don't know, somewhere in a cafe, whatever. And that's kind of the seed of this, right? But then it's, on top of that, we now, and in the past, a physical location would allow something similar. You can set up the fundamental infrastructure also completely autonomously. And that's currently not the case. So you can like, what I was thinking about reading these books, like, yeah, back in the day, theoretically, you know, one could just like literally pack their bags, go with a group of people somewhere, whatever, meet some other people along the way, settle somewhere, and start like doing some agriculture, setting up the basic needs that you have, potentially doing some trades with others around you, but eventually you would establish something. Well, you know, the last, I don't know, 100 plus at least years, we have not really been able to do such a thing without maintaining our dependence on the current Leviathan, being the state. Like, you would always still go to the, I don't know, supermarket, whatever. You could theoretically buy land, but that the property rights would still be backed by whatever state you bought that land in, right? So that kind of changed in the network situation where, no, you can literally just migrate away, even though your physical location might still be tied to where you are. You can already start migrating away and transacting with people in a completely autonomous way. And now the idea is that allows us to then manifest that in reality at some point. And then you just have the complete infrastructure completely autonomously set up. And that is a new innovation to be able to branch off so fundamentally. I don't know if that makes sense, but it's very much related indeed. Like, it all starts, what you mentioned as well, with this moral innovation, like scarcity.
Yeah, exactly. So again, like, few questions here, implications. So I think you said earlier in your talk that capitalism here seems to be like the one of the fundamentals. Like I'm seeing that too, because like it seems to be like that in capitalist countries, this network allows itself to emerge fully, and therefore the network peers, they can connect. Let's say China, for example, is very strong on the, you know, on the internet, the free internet. So the peers, the members of that network of like China, they are not able to tap into that yet, because the nation state, the previous iteration, is now preventing that from happening. So in the US or in the West, this is fully blooming because the capitalist structure allows for that. So it seems that by definition, the inception will be capitalist by nature, but then it also seems that you can transcend capitalism from it, because you can align now, let's say, on very anti or very or views that are very different from capitalism, because that is maybe now a big need in capitalist society, right? So there might be a very strong, I don't know, communist movement that they will align on that moral virtue.
In my framework, at least, I see capitalism different from the infrastructure that allows it. So, like, I think capitalism is an ideology that resulted in a certain form of infrastructure that we have here, where we are in kind of the modern West. But that's not to say that it is impossible to have a similar infrastructure where things are not capitalistic, right? There's enough societies in the world that do have internet banks and whatever. They're managed differently, yes, but fundamentally, I think it's the infrastructure that allows people to spring off like this, even though indeed like China makes it, I would presume, substantially harder to do something like that. But then indeed, from the fact that infrastructure is there, like here, you have the freedom to discuss stuff on the internet, and you can like set up your own cryptocurrency, whatever, maybe a little bit of pushback, but mainly you can get it done. And then some of these people that do this might not be capitalistic at all. Maybe they're actually super communistic and they want to set up a currency, a cryptocurrency that completely resembles that ideology, even though, yes, I guess a large part of the infrastructure that allowed them to get together in the first place over the last, I don't know, so many decades was a consequence of capitalistic ideology. But I think that kind of like, what is beautiful about this is capitalistic ideology gave us these tools, but what we create with these tools can be completely independent from capitalism itself, which is interesting because you can...
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Good.
Sorry. That's kind of what I want to say. Like, it seems to me like the network, maybe it's not capitalism, maybe it's more liberalism, or like, but it seems that these networks emerge in certain places, like that are nation states that give free access duties to networks for people to align on certain topics. And therefore it's in a sense, it's kind of like a Trojan horse, right? Because then you also allow for the, you know, the other and more anti-freedom networks to arise. I'm just sparring. I'm not saying that that's necessarily a bad thing. I'm just thinking, okay, that's very interesting because it seems in a way to be ultimately the end of the nation state, if I think this through to its conclusion.
Well, I mean,
or no.
I really don't know, because I don't know if the, and this is also is an interesting thing that he kind of points to at the book as well, is that the you then get back to the cyclical nature. So like, what's to say that a network state won't result in something very similar? So you have a network state, diplomatic recognition, and you get the same point, you know, like, oh, people are freedom loving, they set this up, they try to set up their own constitution, or at least a moral innovation, currency, everything that we just discussed. And then fast forward 50 whatever years, now you have an establishment, there's a new Leviathan, people start resisting that again, and you get another cycle. So I mean, certainly there's a Trojan horse aspect there, because the freedom that we are, and I think that should be a right that we establish as a species at some point, but to explore new optionalities results in this kind of Trojan horse aspect where people, yes, they can kind of fork and create alternative realities that maybe in a way could be called cannibalizing on the current, you know, the current state, whatever. But it is not unlikely that those end up in the same place anyways. But then we'll continue the cycle of like looking for a new optionality. It's, and you get back to that, and potentially, dude, you know, like the next cycle will be space.
Man, the future is so unpredictable. Like when you say this, like we can fork in alternate realities with the concept of network states, and now AI is being dropped into the equation, and like,
yeah, well,
I have no clue what's going to happen, man. This is so,
yeah, it's so interesting.
Beyond my comprehension.
I haven't thought of this yet, but you just mentioned something funny, like a fun thought to play with. But like, we're talking about network state, like being set up by people, you know, it's blah, blah, blah. But AI is starting to like grow and grow more. I can imagine, and also there's now a lot of clarity on the fact that it seems like the open source community in terms of AI and large language models is actually going faster than some of the current established companies like OpenAI and Google and whatever. So if you combine those, it's like, wow, we have open source, which is very network state aligned. Large language models, e.g. what we, in a general term, call AI nowadays in media, is growing really fast, and it's we can, you know, autonomously use it, whatever, without paying a certain nice company. People will probably start to combine this, and you get some interesting ideologies, but like AI really plays a fundamental role in a network state. I haven't thought of the fact that this creates a whole new set of, yeah, well, Jesus. Yeah. That's a different
podcast. I don't know, man. Like I feel like we're slowly merging into some kind of like new species. And like all our previous structures are crumbling beneath our feet.
Wow. That's very,
like, existential. How long is this nation state? Yeah, but this nation state concept, like it's still going on, but like the technology is way ahead almost of the ideology that it's embedded in. So yeah, how is this going to like you just said, like if you have open source, you have AI, and you can, you know, you can synthesize that, and then you will create by default some very obscure network states, right? And those will compete with other AI network states. This is just, okay. It sounds interesting. let's say like that. It's an interesting concept, but like no prediction from my end on this.
You know, I think I recently read a little bit more into the period of independence from the United States, from the United Kingdom, and you know, upon reading more about the network state again and doing a little bit of extra research for this podcast, I also realized, like, you know, it's not unlikely with all these like crazy innovations now, you know. It feels for us maybe somewhat similar than it has felt for people back in the day in the United Kingdom, like, or in London, maybe more specifically, being involved with this process and seeing like, Jesus, these people are setting up a completely new colony, and we have a certain amount of control, but now they want independence, and, you know, taxation is an issue. And then they start like fighting it out. And then at some point it becomes somewhat of a war, and then there's independence. I think, you know, at some point it is not unlikely, because there's also been some commentary on the network state where people say, yeah, this is totally not going to happen. Like no country or state will allow this this diplomatic independence thing. And that's the thing, is like, I think a lot of people back in the day, around the 1770s, were also saying like, no way, you know, we are never going to let the United States be the United States. But it did happen, and there was some war involved, but it was eventually, there was agreement. So I don't know. I think it's not unlikely that something like that might happen. I don't think it's that bleak. It is going to be strange, but
yeah, I'm asking myself, like, I'm reflecting on this lately more, like, how relative is this? Because you basically make a relative argument, like, okay, it was like this back then. There's always this sense that things will not work out. This is not going to happen, but it's all relative. It's always like this greater unconscious good that, you know, that we as small little egos are not capable of comprehending, right? So of comprehending, it's like, yeah, there's always that daunting fear. But like, on the other hand, you also have now technology that exponentially grows. So I'm asking myself, okay, how relative is it really? Because yeah, okay, maybe we have that now as well. Like, okay, it's always a big fear, you know, with the old network states, you know, is the nation state going to crumble? Yeah, but like the AI component, the technology component is a pretty important factor in that regard. Because like the technology is evolving, but we as humans are not really going along with that, right? Our biological disposition is staying quite the same. It's very slowly adapting. So our primal needs, our primal fears, our primal desires, they all kind of like stay the same while technology is increasingly exponentially like evolving, developing. And how relative is this really? Because I feel, and but that's also, again, like I feel all that we're now at a tipping point, but when I read the books of like older thinkers, they always felt like there was a tipping point. You know, I think I was reading Maps of Meaning from Peterson a few months back, and his whole intro is that he had nightmares because of the nuclear war, right? Between the Cold War between the East and the West. And that he thought like, yeah, this is the tipping point, because now we have so much nuclear force that, you know, this is the end of the world. And I kind of have a similar sensation that like, yeah, now we have so much like AI technological force, and now AI is being implemented in war and in companies that produce weapons and everything. And I'm just thinking about this at night, like how are we even still alive? Am I a doomer? Am I a doom thinker? I don't think so. I'm quite optimistic in general sense, but like the capacity of self-destruction that we are creating here is just immense, but we're still here. So maybe my whole outset is just wrong. So I'm really struggling with this how relative are things concept. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a really good question, man. I mean, I'm not, the thing is like, I agree with you. It seems like there was a similar level of like potential dread with people in history, like Jordan Peterson. And if you go back there, I mean, obviously I think it actually points to this in Network State as well. Like back in the day, you had God fearing, right? So if a man was a God fearing man, he was potentially like a good moral man. And that actually kept us pretty controlled. And then, you know, then we had the innovation that we recently have. And there is actually potentially an argument that the fact that we created the most destructive thing that we've ever seen, that physically we could prove was that destructive, nuclear weapons, that actually had a big impact on religion, maybe, because the biggest thing to fear was not God anymore. It was the stuff that we created. And it seems like maybe it's not our capacity to destruct ourselves that is increasing, but it's our capacity to produce the capacity to destroy ourselves. Like we can now produce, maybe we won't be able to produce more destructive weapons. Do we even need to? Because we've already produced the ones that are able to wipe us completely anyways. But we can produce them faster and more cheaply. So that is a scary thing. But at the same time, what I find interesting in this whole thing is like, yeah, but you know, I could, because I can imagine, you know, we had flight at some point or even travel overseas, that people that were very religious and what we would now would call, you know, very, just like really short-sighted perhaps, thinking like, this is crazy. Like, what, you know, what is at the other land? There must be like aliens or whatever. I don't know. And we have the same kind of fear perhaps that some other people, like normal people that didn't end up writing books, because history is obviously filled with people that were the winners. Maybe also there are a lot of people that just thought to themselves, like, that would happen. We have the same fears, but we are also increasing our capacity to go new places with AI, right? Space travel and stuff. So it's like we increase our capacity to store ourselves, but it seems like we're also increasing our capacity to survive. And I think that's a similar thing.
Is happened. That is that ratio good?
No, yeah, that we'll find out. I mean,
like we are not decentralizing. We're still on one planet, right? We're still very centralized on Earth. So. Yeah. Yeah, I fully get what you're saying, but like I'm just struggling with it myself. Like maybe I am completely wrong, or like maybe my intuition is completely off. But it seems to me that exactly like you said, we are making the ability to self-destruct easier, cheaper. Just like it's getting so cheap, and it's, you know, probably in a few decades you can 3D print a nuclear atom bomb. I don't fucking know, you know, but. And you can deploy it with AI all over. Like, it seems like impossible or implausible. Maybe I'm pessimistic in that sense, but it seems that, and I think Elon Musk is kind of saying the same thing with his whole Mars mission, that we have to decentralize a bit, you know, because we are putting a lot at stake here on Earth.
Yeah.
So,
I feel you. Yeah, I totally agree. I think you know the problem with this is like, I mean, I think we both acknowledge that, and that's exactly where this kind of somewhat, and I think a lot of people are feeling this, somewhat underlying existential fear is coming from. Like it's whatever you think of it, you can't prevent it. And I think we've been unable to prevent it ever from happening, because people, first of all, there's no central control. And even when we try to get central control, you have enough people that were resisted so harshly that they'll create optionality in some way or form. I mean, movies and books have been written about this, where you have, I mean, The Matrix is effectively about this. It's like, it's impossible to have complete control from an engineer systems perspective. And because it's impossible to have complete control, you need to have some kind of anomaly that still allows a certain degree of freedom, but to make sure that it repeats in specifically this way so that you can keep control. Well, basically what I'm saying is it's completely impossible for us to control these kind of stupid, crazy, completely destructive innovations that we might create. And it's always been. But the funny thing is, at the same time, I do believe that the search that as a consequence creates these potentially extremely destructive things, this search is actually a good thing. So like the search for freedom, for optionality, has always been more a force for good than a force for bad. Obviously, because of the nature of how we work, this is at least what I tell myself, the way I work, my brain is supposed to work, is much more focused about identifying dangers. But at the same time, it is also very much interrelated to that, very focused on finding options, freedom, escape from, freedom to. And I think it's easy to forget that, yes, we're going very fast in a potential kind of doom scenario, but I think we sometimes forget that we are extremely adaptive. And as a consequence, I suspect that we will exponentially increase our search for freedom and optionality as well. So I'm optimistic in the sense that if AI goes quite bad, stuff might go wrong. But I suspect that it will improve and speed up our space exploration and like the craziest advances that we have ever imagined. Maybe it is actually something that's necessary. Yeah. Like we need to have the constant fear of utter complete destruction so that we finally get off our ass and do what we're meant to do. I don't know.
I agree with that.
Trying to be optimistic.
I actually agree with that. So, yeah, no, that's that, like I said, like I'm also an optimist in that regard. So, like, I'm more and more also accepting that view. Like, we need to have this doom, like this fear of destruction, because it motivates us. Is it not like Dostoevsky who said something like that? I don't know, but that you need to have some like this external fear that motivates the, you know, the crap out of you, basically.
Could be.
Anyway. I didn't think you said it like that, but you get the gist of it. Okay, I'm curious, like how we got from network state to like ultimate doom conversation. But
yeah.
It seems like a lot of our conversations go in that direction. Maybe our own biases. We need to check that.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
but okay. To tie it into the network state, then, and maybe also to wrap up. I guess we're almost an hour in, I think. And I know you have important meetings to attend, and me too. So let's wrap it up. Okay. What would be a network state, just short term or medium long term, that you would be inclined to want to be part of?
Wow. That's confronting. I don't think I've thought about that enough. I thought about what is this network state going to be, and you know, what does it look like? But I haven't actually considered what do I really want? What would I like to be part of? That's a good question. I think I would very much like to be. The first thing that pops to mind, and I mentioned it a couple of times already, is the freedom to explore longevity more deeply. I think that's the first and foremost thing I would like to be a part of. And then on top of that, I mean, something that bothers me, and I think the reason I also started to buy into cryptocurrency much more, is that I do feel and have felt for a long time that I think the current structure that we have, therefore I mean like the political economical structure, is like, it was a really awesome idea for at a point, but it's become really inefficient in a lot of ways. I don't blame any particular person for it. It's just normal. It's fine. It's a system problem. But I think we need to do better than that. So I would very much want to be part of a probably more along the lines of a Bitcoin society, where we explore alternative ways of, okay, how can you organize finances to have some form of taxation? Because it seems to make sense, but the way that it's implemented doesn't, you know. So that direction of economical and political alternative society, albeit small, more as an experiment focused, potentially combined with longevity research, they resemble really strong values that I have, because there's freedom, optionality, exploration to create an alternative system, and also live longer, which I think is a wish for many people. In short, that's kind of it. What about you?
Nice. Yeah, I thought about this also, like, this similar to you. I was the first weeks, months, I was thinking about it, only thinking about how this would look like infrastructure wise. I never asked myself, what kind of network stake do I actually want to be part of? Yeah. But I thought, okay, what is the deepest fundamental truth, basically, that I need or want to have in a society that to live in, to be part of? And I think that it works. It builds up from there. So I also I came to Bitcoin as well, because like I said, it stands for so more than just, you know, money or just some value in a monetary sense. It's way deeper than that. It like we discussed, it's about freedom, and it's about recognition of the individual. And I think that is key. So like, for me, I'm a Westerner in that sense. Like, I think I want to be part of a society where the individual is paramount, not above the collective, but it's in a way it's central, and where everyone is supported to be a free individual, so to individuate to their full potential. So in that sense, I'm hyper Western, and I think that in many ways the Western ethos, to the deepest core, as it has been, it's something I align with. I just think we've gone very far off track, especially, you know, with the whole monetary policies, and I think those are key, because I don't want to go to like, oh, money is important, but like, I think they are the structure, the fundamental bones of the society. So I also was like, yeah, I think somewhere where Bitcoin is implemented in the way it was supposed to be, I think that would be, for me, a network state. Like, yeah, I can build on that, because probably the rest will flow from that. But I don't have something like, oh, I want to be a network state of a specific, like, longevity for me is too, it's too down the line, you know? It's like, do you know what I mean with that? It's too specific.
Okay.
Like, oh yeah, longevity, what does that mean?
So if I get it right, it is because Bitcoin resembles freedom for you, which I think it does for a lot of people, you would side with a potential network state of society like that, because it allows for a kind of moral innovation that is most important for you, which is the recognition and the autonomy, I suspect, of the individual and that society. And it's actually the fact that it stays moral and doesn't become as specific as like longevity. That's kind of also the reason you would want to go that way instead of something much more specific. Why, by the way, just curiosity, why is the specifics of saying longevity, why is that a potential reason for you to say, hey, I don't want to go that direction?
I'm thinking like, okay, maybe my approach to it is not the correct approach, but the way I approach it is in the sense that what is the fundamental truth that we can align on? And that is how we organize ourselves. And for me, that freedom is a really big one, individual freedom. I think that is like, if we get that one right, you know, the rest will follow like around that. That's like in the mandala, it's the central point, you know, and longevity is probably something that will form around that. But if you centralize longevity, then you centralize something which is not a deep truth for me. It's like, it's just a second order, third order effect of freedom, of individual freedom. Okay, then you kind of like run into all kinds of trouble because, okay, longevity, that's fun and well, but like there are many ways that you can go to longevity. You don't necessarily need individual freedom to solve the longevity equation, let's say like that. So maybe my approach is a bit wrong. Maybe you can be part of several network states. Maybe I'm unifying to one specific state that I want to be part of. So I'm grappling with that. But like for me, I think that's the way I want to, or I would attack that.
Yeah, that makes sense. No, I think, if I were to be able to say something about the quote unquote correct approach, I think it's absolutely the correct approach because the focus is on like, what is the most important, like substantial, you know, moral, systematic change or innovation that we need. And what you're saying effectively is freedom. There's like consistent, systematic, maybe unintentional, but suppression of freedom in our current society. And that's the thing that we need to go for. And Bitcoin is the best structural representation of something that we can use to get there. One just follow-up question before we close off, because you prompted an interesting one. Sometimes I think to myself, you know, okay, we have this Western society and we have infinite options. Like I'm going to the supermarket and the amount of stuff I can buy is already really crazy. And I went to the US recently and there I was completely overwhelmed by the options I had. And I think to myself, okay, so we have this very expensive, complicated financial infrastructure. We have an insane amount of options, but would I be okay with living in a society where, yes, we, you know, we use, for example, Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies. And we just accept that we live in a much simpler society and our focus is much more on different aspects. So it's not about, oh, how can we produce like, I don't know, 100 types of chips, but much more minimalist, just accepting very basic freedoms only and just stick with that. And then focus on things that are morally more important for us. Is that something you would subscribe to? Like, let's imagine there's a remote island. It's self-sustaining because we already have the technological innovations to do everything pretty cheaply that makes us self-sustaining, you know, like water, electricity, food. The only thing we don't have is a lot of options. Would you subscribe to society like that? If I would be like, yo, Niels, come visit me and live with me on that island where we have that. Or would you want to have some of the commercial advantages we have here right now?
No, so I guess what you're alluding to is the deepest question: what is meaningful in life? That's basically it. Like I think that capitalism right now is like an absurd shit show. You know, like what you said. Like we have 5,000 different flavors of chips, and it's like, yeah, what the hell? It's almost like, is this actually real? Like I'm sometimes walking through life and I'm like, it feels just like it's a joke, you know? It's like what has this become?
Yeah,
so in that sense, like I think I would be way happier or way more fulfilled or have more meaning in my life if I would live on such an island where, you know, there is just the fundamentals are right, you know, like community, family, freedom, nature, those kind of things. So I think I read recently in a book about psychedelics that there are ancient indigenous tribes, I think in North America, that used to have a ritual that they would burn all their excess wealth, you know, stuff they wouldn't need, they would burn. And like, I thought about that deeply for like a few weeks, really. Like that is something very deep, you know, like it says like everything that is too much is basically poison. And if you're going to stack too much stuff you don't need, that's already poison. That then, you know, it's in our system to burn that. That's also a mechanism. You know, that could also be a systematic way to ensure that you focus on certain values.
Wow.
Right?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, go for it.
Well, so you just made me realize something interesting, very interesting, actually. Money is debt, right? Fiat. So the excess that we have is actually a pile of debt. And I remember through history, I was reading this book, Debt. There's actually been a couple of occasions where society was about to collapse. I mean, albeit smaller societies than we have now, about to collapse. And then they just did, through several potential means, they did a complete debt reset, effectively burning the excess. So the rich would be heavily taxed, giving more to the poor, because otherwise there was just basically a economical oppression happening. And that cycle has actually happened quite a few times. And it just makes me think of what you just mentioned. Is like, yeah, actually, that's a really good point. we might need to head in that direction. I don't know if this is related to what you just said in your perspective, but I thought it was worth mentioning, is that this stuff like this has really physically happened several times already.
Yeah. So I think we should create a network state where we just burn all our shit. So.
Okay. Okay. I'm not, yeah, that's actually a confronting thing. Are we ready to do that ourselves? I mean, to be honest, maybe it's a nice way to close it off. Probably if it would mean that the things you mentioned, like the basics, you know, like community, health, family, those things would be covered. Would you leave behind the excess? I would say, personally, yes, I think I would be okay with that. What about you?
I think I need to meditate on that a bit more in order for a given answer. I give you the next episode, I'll give you my answer.
All right, good deal. A nice cliffhanger. I like that. Yeah.
that's a good cliffhanger. Will Niels burn his shit next time in episode 4? Anyway, yeah, great episode, man.
Yeah.
Just exactly 1 hour. Perfect. It's like we're... You know, like we're so trained to do this.
Perfect.
Yeah, cool. I think it was a great episode. We'll chat off camera on what we can do next time. I think we should go with the flow. Let's see what other things we wanna chat about. It's also, I have no clue, so it's gonna be a big surprise. And yeah, we'll see you in the next one.
Awesome, man. See you.